I realize when I pretend humility that I open myself for certain heckling from some males on my right rear. And I hesitate to enter into this brief and seldom discussion of my humility, or at my pretense of it, but I'll make this few statements because they're introductory to my sermon and very important to what I'm going to say. And I do not think I'm going to use the tool of dynamics tonight to keep your attention. I foresee not much humor tonight. I never know exactly which way a sermon's going to turn out. But tonight, it's one of those helpful messages. Tonight is not a... We're not going to wax the car tonight. We're going to fix the carburetor. We're not going to take a drive tonight in the elite section of town. We're going to take a drive down the alley tonight and talk to you for a while. I say this seriously. Nobody who knows me ever accuses me of being an intellectual. I have no really real reason to pastor a church of this magnitude, none whatsoever. I'm not the kind of person who can carry many things on my mind at one time. I'm a one-thing man. I get frustrated if my mind is carrying two things at a time. And I carry the heaviest load, and there's no doubt about this. I carry more things on my mind than any pastor in the history of America, because there's never been a pastor pastor as many people as I pastor. Never been a pastor had half the size Sunday school we have here at First Baptist Church. Add to that the organization of it, teachers and officers meeting, deacons meetings, preparing sermons, preaching sermons, writing books, traveling Mondays and Tuesdays, conducting weddings, some funerals, 145 people in my office every week for counseling, nationwide youth conference, 57-year-old man, nearly 58, conducting a nationwide youth conference. It's sort of stupid, you think about it. And then in just a few weeks, I'll be leading in vacation Bible school, which is more ridiculous. 57-year-old man up here making a fool of himself, or as I said this morning, revealing he's a fool. And then add to that the budget and the finances and the college and the two high schools and the grade school and the staff meetings and meetings with different leaders, departmental heads, and so forth. My only salvation, it's not my brilliance, because I don't have an overabundance of that. It's not my smarts. It's one thing. And it's not a bad word. Organization. That's the whole thing. I mean the proper organizing of my life. I'm talking about organization of the church, though that's important too. But the proper organizing of my life. Recently, after a night of appointments, I just had appointments from 5:45 to 11 o'clock that night, one after the other. I think I had about 24 people in my study for appointments that night. I sat down about 11:20 in my office behind the desk and chair behind the desk, and I said this: not a single person tonight who came to see me had a spiritual problem. Not a one. Every problem tonight was an organizational problem. Every one. Not one single spiritual problem. And then I got thinking, my people, most of them, don't have spiritual problems. They have organizational problems. Most of our spiritual problems are at best caused by organizational problems. I'm not one that believes you ought to organize the Spirit of God out of the church. And I'm not one that believes that you can organize God's power. But I am one that believes the Bible, and the Bible plainly teaches us that we're supposed to be proper. 1 Corinthians 14:40 says we ought to do things decently and in order. Decently and in order. God's not the author of confusion, the Bible says. Again, it says in Romans 12:11, we're not to be slothful in business, but fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. We read a while ago, and you don't have to turn to it, but when Jesus fed the 5,000, this great miracle, perhaps the greatest miracle apart from the resurrection of Christ. But this great miracle, it was an organized situation here. They didn't have run up down the aisles and just hooping and hollering. It's organized. The Lord said, He said, make the men sit down. He divided those men in companies, organized. And then He served them at the miracle in those companies. And then, when they were all finished eating, He got baskets and took up the fragments. Nothing wasted. Took up the fragments. And there were 12 baskets left over. Say, what did it do with the baskets? I think it did with it. I don't know. I think the little kid got them. I think he went home that day with 12 baskets full of food. And his mama said, where have you been? He said, Mama, you won't believe what I've been doing. And she didn't. She said, son, you've been down to the fish market. And you've been stealing some bread. You've been down to the bakery. No, Mama. Well, what happened? He said, go ahead and spank me. You're not going to believe a word I say. I think Jesus is saying to the boy, teaching the lesson to the boy, you give a little bit, and I'll give you a lot back. Cast your bread on the waters, you'll return after many days. That's what I think the Bible is teaching here. But it says, and when they were filled, He said to the disciples, gather up the fragments that remain, that nothing be lost. Therefore they gathered them together and filled 12 baskets with the fragments of the 5 barley loaves. I love that. I think that's one of the sweetest scriptures. They filled 12 baskets with what's left over from the 5 loaves and 2 fishes. I mean, you didn't get that, did you? I mean, they had left over from 5 loaves and 2 fishes, a little sack or bag, enough to fill 12 baskets. Well, but the whole thing was a beautiful picture of organization. The cause of most of our problems, now follow me carefully, this next statement is the pivotal statement that's going to take us from the introduction to the discussion tonight. The reason we're disorganized and the reason we're not personally in our lives organized properly and in our churches and in our homes. The main cause is, hear me now, the making of too many decisions. Most of our problems in our homes, most of the couples with whom I talk concerning marriage, their big problem is, they don't know it, but they share in the decision-making process too much and have too many decisions to make. Now, a while ago, we voted to buy a $90,000 building. It cost us probably $250,000 to build it. And It took us just a few minutes. Nobody come. Oh, we had one griper down here on the second row. I don't know what we want to use it for, but he's new here. And he'll get the hang in a few minutes. He'll get the hang. Nobody. But anyway, once again, for you folks who are here tonight to criticize, I'm going to give you an awful lot of material tonight, so I'd take notes if I were you. And I'm going to give you an awful lot of things to say, and you're going to have a wonderful month the next 4 or 5 weeks. And most churches have trouble because they've got too many hands in the decision-making pie. That's the problem. And the reason is they're not properly organized. I didn't say they're not organized. They're not quite organized. You see, there's some things that can prevent the making of too many decisions. Now, follow me carefully. If a young person is trying to live right, and that young person has to make 500 decisions a month of shall I do this or not, he's going to have more opportunity to make the wrong decision than if he makes 5 decisions a month. So the more you can cut down the decisions you'll make, the more you'll cut down the mistakes you make and the sins you commit. Now, there are 3 things that can prevent the multiplicity. Notice that big word, multiplicity. That means there's a heap of them. And that can cut down the multiplicity of decisions. You know, if I could, and if God would let me, I'd start my vacation the 1st of June and come back the 1st of September. I'll be honest with you, it is twice as hard, and any preacher will tell you this, it is twice as hard to pastor a church in the summertime as it is in the spring, fall, and winter. You know why? Because the people are out of routine. And because of that, their schedule does not make the decision for them. They have more decisions to make than any other time of the year. And because they do have more decisions to make, they make them together sometime. For example, here's a couple riding down the highway on a vacation. They got 2 kids in the back seat. For here, that means they're 22 years old. 25, 5 kids in the back seat. 30, they can't afford a vacation. But here's a couple on vaccination, a couple of kids in the back seat. Okay, it's 12 o'clock. It's time to eat. He says to her, what does he say? Where do you want to eat? Boy, there's nothing like the American male for the decision-making process. Nothing like the American male. He says to her, where do you want to eat? Boy, he takes things on hand. He says, I don't care if you like it or not. We're going to eat where you want to. And she says, you know, some of you folks ought to laugh or go home. You're bothering me a little bit. I'd prefer the latter. Anyway, so she says, let's eat this one. He said, no, I think we can find a better one down the road. Many a couple has run out of gas looking for a better service station and a better restaurant down the road. Many a couple. And so, finally, as Abraham Lincoln said, he said, I wanted to paint the house white. The wife wanted to paint it green. So we compromised and painted it green. And finally, they stop and eat where she wants to eat. And then the service is bad. Food stinks. And he says, I told you. I told you. Well, she said, why didn't you choose where you wanted to go? Well, is it because I'm too nice? I don't have to have my way. She said, since when did you get nice? And Junior said, Daddy, I want to eat at McDonald's all the time. He said, it did sure beat the place your mama chose. Now, you're laughing because you've been there this year. I mean, now, what's the trouble? The trouble is too many decisions to make. Now, if somebody would be in charge of the restaurant choosing and just choose it and
And then that take care of it. But you see, when we get all of our hands in the decision-making process and make more decisions, you make, more chance you got to have trouble. Now, there are three things I want to give you. First is, you'll make less decisions if you'll let your principles make your decisions instead of your will. You decide in life your principles. And let the principles make the decision. You'll agree to that, wouldn't you? Because you're a principal. And but if you look, the average person makes a decision on the spur of the moment. And because of that, there are chances for mistakes and chances for trouble, and the whole reason is a lack of organization. Now, example, I'm not gonna go into this and give you, you've heard this often, but I'm not gonna go into the whole story, but just it's such a perfect illustration of what I mean. 36 years ago, I was called to my second pastorate, Grange Hall Baptist Church, outside the city of Marshall, Texas. The church called me with a vote of 27 to 26. It was a landslide. 26 of my 27 votes were teenagers and children. One was a lady, no man. I was young at the time, and the kids liked me, and the teenagers liked me, and this lady had a teenage girl that liked me, and the men wanted an older man. So they came, this one lady and all the teenagers came over to our apartment, 2007 North Franklin Street, Marshall, Texas, late at night, and said, "We elected you as our pastor." But said the deacon chairman said, "Over my dead body will he walk in this pulpit." That would have been fine with me. If you had known him, you would have liked to have walked over his dead body too. But, so, I got a call late in the night, about midnight, and the deacon chairman said, "Reverend Hiles," anybody called me Reverend, I know they're backslidden already, and he said, "Reverend Hiles, I and the church treasurer and the Sunday school superintendent would like to meet you now." Well, I drove out the edge of town, outside city limits, and a little country, just a typical little country church out on the side of the highway, little white building, little parsonage beside it, and no lights on, and they asked me to come in, sat me down right here where you're sitting, and the three of them stood up in front of me and looked at me, and they said, "Reverend, hi. You've been voted as pastor of this church, but not one man voted for you, and only one adult." And they said, "You're not walking into that pulpit." You know, when a deacon says to me, "I can't do something," it gives me the strongest urge to do it. And I said, "I'm not," by the way, I had been called to the First Baptist Church of Leesburg, Texas as pastor. Unanimous call. They wanted me. Unanimous call. And I was thinking about that. Now I had two calls. Had to make a choice. And I said to the deacon that night, and I was just a kid preacher. I was only good night. I was only 21 years old. And I said, "Sir, I do not know if I'm going to pastor this church. I have a unanimous call from the First Baptist Church of Leesburg, Texas. I may accept that. I do not know the will of God for my life." But I said, "If God leads me to pastor this church, it'll take more than the deacon chairman and Sunday school superintendent and the treasurer to keep me out of the pulpit." And they said, "Okay, we'll fight you to the finish, and we'll see to it, you don't get your pay." By the way, I took that church, and for 8 weeks, I got me a lawnmower. I bought a lawnmower. I didn't have the electric ones in, or the gas engine. They just pushed them. And I went up and down the road asking folks if I could mow their lawn. And the pastor of the neighborhood church is mowing lawns for $1 a lawn. And that night when I left meeting, I got in a 1941 Dodge and drove out in the country about 3 o'clock in the morning. And I got to thinking, I better make some decisions that'll make my decisions. And that's what the secret of life is. Make decisions that'll make your decisions. So, I made five decisions that night, and I'm not sure why these five, how all these five fit with that occasion. I made this first decision I made and said, I'll never make money an issue in my preaching. Never will. Never. I pastored five churches. I've taken a cut in pay every time I've changed churches. Number two, I said nobody will tell me where to preach, when to preach, what to preach, or how long to preach. Nobody. I said number three, I'll be a friend to my friends. Now, how that got in here, I don't know. But I said, I'll be a friend to my friends. Number four, I said, Dear God, this is 3 o'clock in the morning in the sand hills of East Texas, sitting with the car door open part of the time, on my knees beside the car, out in the country. Number four, I'll be loyal to truth and not to institutions. And I'll only be loyal to those institutions that adhere to what I believe is the truth. Number five, I will make my decisions based on principle and not how they turn out. I'll do what I think is right. That gets me fired. I'll do what I think is right. It gets me in a fight. I'll do what I think is right. It gets me a raise in pay. I'll do what I think is right. Doesn't matter how it turns out. I'll base every decision on the immediacy of is it right or is it wrong. Now, those five decisions I made that night became principles. And this has eliminated thousands of decisions in my life. Why? Because the decisions of my life, thousands of them, have fallen on these five principles. And I don't have to make the decision. The principle makes the decision for me. Illustration. I became pastor of the Miller Road Baptist Church, Garland, Texas. First week I was there, a deacon walked up after the service and said to me, I want to talk to you about your preaching. And I said, hold it. Now see, did I have to make a decision what to do? No. These principles made the decision for me. I made no decision. I decided beside my 1941 Dodge 36 years ago what I'd do if anybody messes with my preaching. See, my preaching is none of your business. It's between God and me. Now, if you want to fire me, that's up to you. But what I preach, I won't check with anybody about that. Nobody. Now, because I don't like that. You don't have to like it, but you've got to put up with it as long as you're here, as long as I'm here. Now, this deacon said to me, about your preaching. And I said, before you start talking, sir, if we build a building, you get one vote. We paint the walls, you get one vote. We borrow the money, you get one vote. When I walk in the pulpit, you don't get no vote. Now, that's what I said. He said, I don't like what you said. Well, you say what you want to say. I'll say what I want to say. But that's what I said. That's what I'll say tonight if anybody says the same thing. My son-in-law, Jack Scott, preaching at the church, he got through preaching, had a wonderful meeting. Deacon walked up, and after the service, a guest preacher said, well, he said, this is what I think. He said, a little bit too long. I would have cremated him. I hope we have some visiting deacons here tonight who don't like this. I think we do. I came to First Baptist Church at Hammond 25 years ago. Some of the men, one of the boards in the church, well, man came and said to me, he said, we got some problems about your preaching. He said, could we have a meeting Monday night to discuss your preaching? I said, sure. Sure. Tuesday morning, he called me and said, where were you? I said, what do you mean? He said, you said we could have a meeting about your preaching. I said, you can. Have whatever night if you want to. I'm not going to show up. I don't care how long you have. All you want to. Doesn't bother me. Now, you say, did you make that decision? No, my principle made that decision. Principle I made 36 years ago, I live by and I die by. For example, my denomination said to me, you've got to support our schools as they are, or we will not allow you to be in our denomination. I had no decision to make. I made that decision 36 years ago. I will give my allegiance to principles and not to institutions. My allegiance is to right and not institutions. And I said to my denomination, lump it. I mean, I'm not going to support, I'm not going to give one dime to a school that doesn't believe every book, word in this book is God's word. Not going to do it. If I get fired, if I get killed, if I get lynched, I don't care. It's all made. I never have to make a decision about whether to support a liberal institution or not, or a denomination that's not loyal to this book. You see, I made some principles years ago that make my decisions for me, and the fewer decisions I have to make, then the less chances of error I have. Example. Now, listen to me carefully, because I'm not boasting, but I'm telling you the truth. For 36 years, no friend of mine is ever in trouble without help, if I know about it. Now, you check my record. When my friend's in trouble, I'm with him. That's my record. Now, you say, well, how do you decide which friends to help? I don't. I made a promise 36 years ago I'd be a friend to my friend. That takes care of it. It's all cared for. It's done. Great transaction's done. My principal makes that decision. John Colston's father, mother was at the point of death. I won't tell you what it did, but it did something he needed done. Now, I didn't say, should I do it? Not at all. Because he's my friend. His mother was near death. He had a need. Didn't ask me for it. I happened to know he had it. I took care of it. He's my friend. Example. Uncle Harvey, one of my uncles, who I was closer than any uncle or aunt I've ever had. Uncle Harvey was a Southern Baptist. He told me if I'd go to Southwestern Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas, and get my doctor's degree, Ph.D., from Southwestern Seminary, he would give me a partnership in his business, and the man that worked for him said it would amount to profit for me of $250,000. And, brother, in those days, $250,000 is worth $5 million now. You say, how did you decide what to do? Didn't decide what to do. Didn't decide. A principal decided for me. I decided years ago money will be no object in my ministry. I took care of it. Russell Anderson, I have in my office right now a title deed to an apartment house building in Ypsilanti, Michigan, with seven apartments. Russell Anderson gave me that title many years ago. He said, sign it. It's yours. I didn't sign it. I kept it in my office for a souvenir somewhere in there now. I don't own it, but I could have had it. Russell said, hey, he said, it's yours, Dr. Howes. I want you to have it. Well, say, why didn't you take it? What'd you base your decision on? Didn't make any decision. Decision made 36 years ago. Now listen, folks, get you some biblical and principles of integrity and character, and decide ahead of time what you'll do under certain circumstances with certain stimuli, and you won't make as many mistakes. Why? Listen, folks, if I sat down someday myself and said, should I take this apartment house or not? Brother, I'd be tempted to take it. Or if I said, should I take this $250,000 or not, I'd be tempted to take it. You see, look, in a moment of weakness, if I made a decision, I might make one that's bad or wrong. But if in a moment of strength, I make a principle and let that principle, and principles know no weakness, let them make my decision, then in times of weakness, I'll make the same decision I make in times of strength. Now, that cuts down my decision. Now, the whole sermon so far is this. A lack of organization is the problem with most of us, and not lack of spirituality. And a lack of organization is caused by confusion, by too many decisions. One way to eliminate these decisions or cut them down, minimize them, is let your principals make the decisions for you. Second thing, schedule can make the decisions for you. You see, I didn't decide this morning whether to come to Sunday school or not. I didn't decide. Some of you folks, every Sunday morning, say, shall we go or not? You got problems. See, because you got 52 Sunday mornings to decide, you got 52 chances to make a mistake. I don't have any. My schedule is set. 2 and 2 is 4. Sunrise in the east, sets in the west. Pope's a Catholic. And I go to Sunday school on Sunday morning. And the Cubs are going to fold. Some things you can depend on in life. Now listen to me. I didn't decide tonight if I should go to church or not. It's all set. I won't say, what shall I do Wednesday night? It's all set. You say, yeah, you're a preacher. I don't go to church because I'm a preacher. And by the way, my mama and I went to church every Sunday morning and every Sunday night, every Wednesday night, when I was that high and that high and that high and that high. And I did not start my character of letting my schedule decide if I go to church or not. When I became a preacher, I did that. And mama took me when I was a boy. It's all set. I have no decisions to make about praying. My schedule decides that for me. You say, I'm going to pray. I've got to pray sometime today. When shall I do it? You won't pray as much as you would if you say, this is the time I pray. Look, did you know that Daniel's courage? Listen, Daniel didn't say, they said, okay, if you pray to anybody but the king, you'll be cast in the lion's den. And Daniel didn't say, well, buddy, nobody's going to tell me I can't pray to my God, and I'm just going to start praying to my God, and I'll pray facing my Jerusalem, and I'll pray. I'll choose this time. No, Daniel didn't do that. He didn't flaunt himself to the authorities. Daniel already was praying same time. He just said, "I won't quit." His schedule had set his prayer. And listen, you check in the Bible how many times it says that so and so went somewhere at the time of prayer. Or at the time that prayer was wont to be made. Now listen, you are not going to be what you ought to be if you are not personally in your life organized. And if you're going to be organized, you've got to cut down the decisions. If you cut down the decisions, you've got to live by principle and you've got to have a schedule. I don't decide when to get up in the morning. That's already set. It's in my schedule. 9:45 every morning. It's in my schedule. I mean, it's all set. Same time. I don't say, well, will I get up or not? Don't set at all. When I travel, I've got 3 alarm clocks right beside me. I don't trust one. One could break. Well, I might not hear one. Well, I might hear one and not appreciate it. And I got one that goes, and I got one that goes, now, whatever mood I'm in is one to fit that mood. I never decide, shall I get up or not? Never do. My schedule decides that. Praying time, Bible time, all those things. What am I doing? I'm cutting down the decision by 2 things so far. Principle makes them. Principles that are preset and scheduled. Number 3. And this is the one I want to hit for a while. You can cut down your decision-making processes. I don't look very nice, do I? By delegation of authority. Delegation of authority. The more we share decisions, the more trouble we make. Churches have splits because they're not organized right. They got too many committees joining and making decisions. Brother Ray, the special you sang tonight, who chose that special? Who did? I see. Who chose how you would sing it, decided finally how you would sing it? You did. Dictator. The churches all over this nation that got little music committees warping the music director and ruining churches having splits. Some little gal went to the Conservatory of Music. Oh, she just swept it out, but she went there one time. All of a sudden, she thinks she's become the authority of the church music program, and I can tell you how to stop 99% of all the church splits in America, and that is choose the fella who knows to do the job best, and let him have the job he knows to do best, and let him make the decision. That's dictatorship. It's not dictatorship. It's sense. Brother Roy Moffat is in charge of the A-Bus ministry. If he wants to have a special promotional deal in the A-Bus ministry, he doesn't have to call a broken down bus committee or a committee of broken down buses. Not to do that. We allocate him so much money in his budget. He wants to have a promotion. He does it. Brother Ray Young's in charge of B, C, and D buses. These two men know more about the bus ministry than anybody in this church. It's not a dictatorship if you delegate to somebody the decision-making process. Churches all over America having trouble because they do not delegate. You got a whole bunch of hands trying to reach the decision-making pie. One fellow wants to do this. One fellow wants to do this. Dr. Elmer Towns wrote the book on the 10 largest Sunday schools in America. He visited all 10 churches. He said he was shocked. He may have written this in his book, I'm not sure. He said he was shocked. He said of all the ten largest Sunday schools in America, he said the First Baptist Church of Hammond, Indiana was the most democratic. Maxine Jeffers is in charge of flowers. Now, we don't have to have 10 people meeting twice a week to decide where she sends flowers. When I came to the First Baptist Church, we had five people on a committee, a flower committee. Took 5 people 7 days to figure out what color petunias to put on the Lord's Supper table. We disbanded that committee, sent those 5 folks soul winning, called a florist and said, bring us a pot of flowers once a week. I think we have pretty nice flowers. Now, I'm saying that our problems, you know, when I first came here, we spent, I guess an hour or two on Wednesday night, until you folks remember it, deciding, arguing, fussing over whether that the American flag ought to be on the right and the Christian flag on the left, or the Christian flag on the right and the American flag on the left. We had folks who are going to die for their convictions. No, I'm sorry. We had folks going to kill for their conviction. Well, you know what I did? I solved it. I just took the flags and put them in the side of the building. So you're not patriotic. The fact that you got a flag hanging don't make you patriotic or not. Now let's go on. Let's go to this. I want to go to especially young folks having marital problems, which is all young folks are married. Let me tell you, Brother Lively, what causes trouble. The other day I counseled a couple. Look, I said, what's the trouble? We don't get along. Why? We don't agree. We fuss. Any particular time of the day? Yeah. While we're awake. Any particular day of the week? Saturday's worse. Well, what do you do on Saturday? Go grocery shopping, one thing. Together? Yeah. That's your problem. It's your problem. It really is. And you know, they almost fought in my study over what brand of chili to buy. I mean, they're going down the aisle and he'd say, you piss, and she said, we don't want that. Well, I want it. You never eat it. I will this time. Make you eat it too if you don't like it. If they bought 100 items at the grocery store, they had 100 decisions to make. Now, you say, won't you preach something deep? Brother, this is deep. Honestly. I said, look, why don't you give her the keys to the car? Give her enough money for groceries and a few dollars extra. You stay home and rock the kids to sleep with a big rock and watch a ball game. I mean, there's 100. Look, I don't care if your name is Elizabeth, your husband's name is Zacharias, or if you're George Washington and Mrs. Washington. How cool you are. Brother, you buy 100 things together, you're not going to end up quoting the 23rd Psalm. You're not going to do it. One of the great problems with young couples who are having trouble is the fact it is not a spiritual problem, it is a poorly organized problem. For example, Dr. Tom Malone said, I love this, he said he and Ms. Malone got married, they had an agreement. They would never share a decision. You know how he talks? He's like me, he has a raspy voice. He, you know, he got married. My wife said to me, son, we shouldn't make decisions together. You make some and I'll make some. She said, now, Tom, all the big decisions are yours. You make them. And all the little decisions are mine. I'll make the little decisions. You make the big ones. He said, we had an agreement. He said, ladies and gentlemen, in 35 years of marriage, not one big decision has ever come up, and I have. Now, I don't think the way it turned out is right, but the philosophy is right. You see, the fact that she said, here is my area over here. Here's yours. Every once in a while, I laugh at myself. That's funny. But see, the decision-making process. Example. Every man I know, when it comes time to discipline the kids, is a beast. Right? Amen? Amen. Cruel. Mean. Child abuse. And every lady I know. You do that one more time, I'm going to spank you. 35 times. You have no idea how it is to be a lady. Sitting in one room, hearing blood-curdling screams coming from the child of her womb, from a beast. And you have no idea, you ladies, how it is. Here. Yeah, those, you know that's not those Sunday. One more time, I'm going to spank you. Now, what's the best thing to do? If the husband is not pleased with the way the wife disciplines the children, don't say anything. Just walk up and... But no, don't do that. No. Just go get in the car and drive around the block. Let her do it. Take a walk. Go ride on a bicycle. Go fly a kite. It's one of those nights, isn't it? But look, folks, look. You will do a lot more harm arguing about her disciplining the children than you would if you just tiptoe out. Now, when the executioner is upstairs with a convict, demonstrating his convictions about capital punishment. Best thing for the wife to do, take a walk. Go outside, work in the flower bed, take a walk. But don't listen. Most of our problems are caused by poor organization. And the poor organization is caused by too many decisions. And the too many decisions give you more chances to do wrong and to have friction. And if you want to cut down your decisions, three things. First, let your principles make your decisions. Second, let your schedule make your decisions. And third, delegate authority. I have young men come in my office, and they're furious at their wives because they don't like where the furniture is in the living room. Well, I could care less. I don't even care if there's any in the living room. But look, fellas, you don't have to be the boss of the furniture committee. Care less. Look, you're not there as much as she is. And you don't care for the house like she does. I'm going to be the head of my house. No, you're not. You're going to be out of your house. Now, why would it be a good idea for you to say to your wife, honey, now, this furniture business, it's your business. Then he would say, okay, finances, that's mine. Now, if you want to put the sofa in the bathroom, I'm going to come home and say, what a novel idea. Or, if you want to put the sink in the entrance hall, let her decide where the furniture is. See, you put both your hands there, and boy, this is good. But amidst all this laughter, there's some healing balm here. And don't have two hands reaching for the same decision or two heads going toward the same decision. Delegate authority. These men, I reserve the right on the staff, I reserve the right to veto anything, but I rarely ever do. Rarely ever do. I've got the finest men in America work for me. I wouldn't trade any of them for anybody in the world. That's the finest men. These men on the platform, like my own sons and own young brothers. And I have the right to veto everything, but I keep my hand on it and watch everything that's going on. But these men have good minds. The majority do. Five do, four don't. That's the majority. And look, I mean this. There's not a man on this platform who wouldn't change anything he's doing if he had the slightest idea Brother Hiles didn't approve of it. That's the truth. That's the way they feel. And sometimes I do, but rarely ever do. I reserve the right. Rarely ever. Why? Because if we made the decisions together, we'd have more chances to have trouble. Young men and older men, give your wife an allowance every week. Give her enough for groceries and a little extra money. You have no idea how difficult it is. Every time she buys a pair of hose, she's got to ask for the money. And you give her enough money, then next week she buys the other hose. You have no idea how honestly how degrading that is. To have no money at all. No money. Everything you buy from a pair of hose to a bobby pin, still wear bobby pins, for your hair. You gotta go say, honey, can I have the money? You like that, don't you? Oh, peasant, I'll think about that. Down. Now, look, you're laughing, but I'll guarantee you there are hundreds of men in this room right now. That's where they operate. I mean, if, It almost takes a requisition in triplicate to get enough money to buy a shower gift for a friend. Now, every lady has a right to have some money that's hers. And she has a right to have a little money that's hers that she doesn't have to fill out she doesn't have to go through Washington, the Pentagon, to get it okay. Give her some money. Give her the keys to the car. Sit home for a while and watch over the kids. Let her go shopping. Give her 15 minutes if she needs it. I'm trying to get spiritual enough to close, but I can't. Our nervousness is caused by lack of organization. Not on our homes, our churches, our nervousness. No schedule, no self-discipline, no organization. Oh, how will I ever get everything done? Oh, I'm going to pull my hair out. That's what I did. I'm going to pull my hair out. Well, I'll never get it all done. I'm a nervous wreck. I know you're a nervous wreck. So get you a schedule and write down on your schedule when you're supposed to do what. Now, I'm going to say this, and I've never been a mother, and chances are getting slimmer all the time. Some of you men probably are close to it. But anyway, listen to me. Well, how can you tell when a baby is going to get sick? You'd be surprised how near you can keep a schedule with a little baby. A little baby will be happier and healthier, and you can get a baby pretty well on schedule. Our daughters read my book, How to Rear Infants. And in that book, I have a portion of it that tells you to keep the baby on schedule. And they often tell me, Dad, we can't always do that, but much of the time, we can do that. Linda told me, she said, Dad, I do the best I can to follow the schedule that you have in your book, and Dad, most of the time, it'll work. Our finances are caused troubles are because no budget. No budget. Brother, nobody ought to live without a budget. Our strife. Paul and Barnabas had trouble. Why? They couldn't agree on the decision-making process. Nobody was the boss. Shall we take John Mark on the second missionary journey? Yep, we ought to do it, said Barnabas. Paul said, don't think so. Now, what they should have done is one of them should have said, okay, you're in charge of deciding who goes on the next journey with us. Had strife. Bible said, no small contention. Trouble. Broke up. You know that most sin is committed because of a lack of organization. If David had kept his schedule, there never would have been Bathsheba and Uriah a problem. He got off schedule. I thank God for 37 blessed years of pastoring. It's hard to believe. I don't remember growing older. I thank God tonight for His goodness, His blessing. I'm a country preacher who learned one thing. I learned I'm not brilliant. I learned I'm not an intellectual. I learned I'm not a carrier of a lot of things, a big load at one time. And so I decided get organized. You saw that checklist for a fellow to do. Number one, get up morning. Number two, bathe. Number three, dress. Number four, get organized. Number five, talk to wife. Number six, get reorganized. Now, that's overputting it, of course, and it's not even accurate, but get up and get organized.